Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am Ted Santos, and I am your host of The Creative Alchemist, and we come to you live every Thursday from 7 until 8, and we discuss, you know, your business, the business, a business, or the business you'd like to have, the business that is thriving in COVID-19 or going through some speed bumps. But we talk about your business challenges. We bring experts, and we've, as you already know, we've discussed topics from finance, leadership, even your own personal health, organizational development. We've addressed really good topics on this show, and tonight will be no different. We'll have an expert in the field of, well, before we introduce her, let me introduce my co-host, because I never take this journey alone. Lori, let them know you're in the house.
Hello, and thank you. And thank you, everyone, for listening to another Thursday night. Lori Miller, interior designer. And I just wanted to remind everyone that I am fundraising for Leukemia Lymphoma. I have a team, and we're running to win Woman of the Year and raise as much money to fight cancer as we possibly can. It is a personal mission of mine. I am a cancer survivor. I've had family who have passed away from cancer. So if you go to my page at LGC Interiors, Facebook, LGC Interiors, Lori Miller, you will see the donation page, and we have all sorts of events. We have a virtual concert on May 15th at 8 o'clock at night, and you can purchase tickets for only $9.99, and it's virtual from the comfort of your home. We have a Peloton ride if you're Peloton riders. We have auctions. We have runway shows. We've got a regular fundraising page if you don't want to do anything and you just want to donate $5, $10, every little bit adds up and every little bit helps. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you in advance. Thank you for supporting us. And let's talk about tonight's guest. So I'm going to say thank you, Dr. Linda Brown, for being here. And we're going to talk about whether leaders are born or made and what are the characteristics of leadership. So Dr. Brown, please introduce yourself, tell everyone a little about you, how they can get a hold of you. And hopefully we'll have some really good questions tonight. We can have some really bad ones, too. And we're open for the debate. You're on, Linda.
Good afternoon, or evening, I should say. It is a pleasure, and thanks so much, you guys, for inviting me to cover a topic that is changing on a daily basis, almost at the rapid speed of technology, to adjust to where we are today compared to a year ago. So my name is Dr. Linda Brown, and my website is my name. It is Linda Brown, P as in Paul, H as in Henry, D as in David, .com. And that will give you an opportunity to get more in-depth information about who I am, where I came from, and where I am somewhat presently today. Just really excited to be a part of this particular talk show, because Ted and I have a history. He's a great guy, and he's always been there, extremely supportive. I'm learning to learn more about Lori as we take this journey. So I've basically outlined some areas to cover and help you to formulate your own opinion about, is leadership born with, a part of your DNA, or is it something that can be learned? And the answer is, or learned. And the answer for me, as a person of veteran experience, diversity, inclusion, including equity, it is one that you have to form your own opinion about. For Linda, it is a combination of both. I don't think to isolate the DNA without fusing in education, acknowledgement, research, experience in different situations. Those are the learn to's as you go through the process, but you got to be self-motivated. You have to have something that says, you know what, I wonder if I'm a leader. I wonder if I can lead this. Oh, my God, I just got this promotion. What am I to do? I don't know how to be a leader. I've never led anything in my whole life. And my answer to that is every morning that you are blessed to rise and you put one foot on the ground and the other to follow, you just began your journey that day as a leader. When you make it out of the house with family or those who live alone and you maneuver through people traffic, vehicle traffic, you get to your workplace safe or you set your office up and you own Zoom, you've done many, many steps of decision-making processes in a timely manner for what it takes to be a leader. But we'll go and we will discover and go through some of the characteristics, identify some of the styles. I'll be glad to give you some reference points for where you can do your own private follow-up to see where you are and how you assess yourself, what percentage is born, what percentage is learned, and what value can you bring to anybody's table. And like they said, if you're not invited to the table, set up a table in your own chair and do your own thing. So I'm not sure where you want to go from here, Ted. I can get start with information or we can start with questions.
So what I would say is first, this is a sort of an age-old discussion. Are leaders born or made, right? We can look historically, and I do a lot of work with CEOs, and I have seen quite a few CEOs who grew up in families where their father was CEO of a major company or an entrepreneur and started a major organization, manufacturing. So it's a debatable question because even hiring managers are they're in the whole question, you know, we're looking for born leaders or we're looking for professional leaders, which is correct. So, and I know you've done a lot of research on this topic. So for someone who has a perspective that they would like to share with you or even explore and have some back and forth dialogue with you, they can call in. The phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. So I'm going to ask you a question, Linda. How do you know if someone is a born leader? Like, how do you know the difference? Is there a way of distinguishing someone who really is a born leader or someone who is made and learned it?
Oh, wow. That's a really broad and in-depth question. And like you said, this is a question that has not definitively been defined. And I'm sure you've experienced that in working with CEOs of all levels of different companies. I would say that for those who are listening, ask yourself, what will I do? If a situation arises and it's an opportunity, a window of opportunity for you to make a valued statement, withstanding regardless of whether or not the people in the room at the table possibly will agree with you, disagree, may like you, totally dislike you, but you take that stance and say, I either have a question or I have a comment to make that may be of value. One of the things you're doing is setting the mindset for the listener to pay attention to who you are and what is next to come forth from your mouth in representation of whatever the subject matter is at the table. But I would have to also say those with families, especially these young people. My goodness, I have seen 3- and 2-year-old rule a whole household of grown folks because of the, what they want, when they want it, which is usually now. Give me this, and if you don't, I'm going to fall out and cry until I get what I want and you give me the right attention that I ask you for. They're leaders. There's actually a style for that type of behavior. And so there are so many diverse ways to look at it and daily situations for which it is practiced, whether you label it for yourself as a leader or not. And the last thing I probably want to, not last thing, but one other point that I would like to say is every industry, including life, levels of position that you have when you're at that table will dictate and usually become guiding light posts for what you say, but more importantly, how you said it, and to the players at the table and what their potential reaction versus response. You always want to be a leader that when you are leading people, they will respond. You go from being a noun to that of an action verb to make things happen and to get results.
So that's interesting. You were talking about standing for something. So several years ago, I had American Express as a client. And at that time, the CEO was Ken Chenault. He just recently, well, not too long ago, retired in 2018. And the person I was working with said part of the reason Ken made his way to CEO, he was an executive, and he made a very, very unpopular decision, and a lot of people were against him. And in the end, I think something changed in the economy. He wanted to go in a direction, and people didn't see it. And in the long run, it was beneficial. Like, he made a great decision. He took a stand for something. It was risky because people didn't see it, except in the end, it was the right thing to do. And it sounds like that's what you're talking about. So at that time, he was not the CEO. He was an executive. And because he made such a big risk and it worked, he really demonstrated his ability to navigate people and demonstrate leadership, even though it wasn't the most popular thing to do, it was the right thing to do. Is that kind of what you're getting at there?
It is indeed, but see, the infrastructure for the people you're leading is trust and communications. You've got to have extremely great communication skills and styles and know your people so that you will know the best type of communication to give to them. There are some that you can go broad scope, emails, because that's all they want. Others you may need to, you do the email because it becomes your position of protection, and it also becomes documented track records. There are others you may have to pull in and say, hey, I'm about to have this meeting next Tuesday, and I want your input on what I'm about to report on and an action change that we're going to make. So when you know your people, you know what levels of communication, what type of communication, be it text, one-on-one, emails always is very supportive because, like I said, it's a protection. It's a way of doing a blast to all parties engaged, and definitely serve as a track record. And then there are other people that is they need combinations thereof. So, but when a leader knows and invests in their people that reports especially directly to them, and if we use the pyramid as a vision, that's your upper management team. And then from that, these managers have other direct reports as well, all the way to the baseline of just individuals and groups. All of this plays a major role in what avenue you take in order to bring about those levels of communication. I'm a little bit familiar with what you were talking about, and I think I heard something on that about 2 months ago where it came back up again, and everybody thought he had truly lost his mind. And I think it had something to do with pulling something away from Walmart. I'm not sure. Those who are listening, you can Google what Ted put on the table. But it's like, okay, that's the greatest employee of the world, and you're going to do what? How can you? I can't believe you're making such a big mistake. And it turned out to be the best move that he made, and it gained the profit line for American Express. So sometimes people don't see the vision that you have. Just make sure you cover your tracks in giving clarity of information and get those invested that will play a major role in the beginning of the ball game, not the after effect. That's when you have the vision.
Well, in this case, what Ken did, he wasn't the CEO yet. So he was expressing to his boss, the CEO, I want to move in this direction. It wasn't Walmart at that time. And even the CEO, his peers couldn't see that. What I'm talking about was him managing up and across to his peers and above him. But he took on leadership, even though he wasn't the CEO of the company. But the move that he made clearly demonstrated his ability to lead in the face of moving in a direction that some didn't look upon favorably, except he did what was right. And even what you described as Walmart, that would have been another example. And he may have done that as CEO, what you're saying. But
I think that was before. CEO.
Yeah, yeah. He became
you know
CEO
what,
in 2001.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that makes a great position of security that he said, I have value. You may not agree or see it right now from a management position, and that he took that risk. But I'm going to tell you something about that old DNA. When you know you got what it takes, regardless of where that you're in, that you know that you can step out and go to other doors because they're probably pooling and asking you, hey, are you happy with American Express? Guess what? We can offer you this CEO position. We're starting salaries at this and that. People will look and find you when you have shown and demonstrated at that level of a management position, because there's a major difference, and you brought something else to the table. There's a different mindset of managing versus that of leading. It's very different. Now, it's transitional and transformative, which are some of the styles of leadership, but it has to be, that's when I think DNA plays a good role of self-motivation, self-confidence, and the learned skills through education, experience, acknowledgement come together and combine to make a wonderful person.
Okay. So are those born traits, or do you have to learn them?
I think, did you ever ask him that question when you worked with American Express?
No, I've never asked a client. I've worked with a lot of CEOs. I never asked them that question.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm glad you asked me that question, because I think that they do not work successfully within their own entity. But when you combine the positiveness of learned as well as born, I think that makes you so self-empowered and motivated that you're anxious to learn and gain more knowledge, that you're anxious to do self-evaluations. What have I done in these situations? How did I make these decisions? Question yourself. Take the evaluation exams that they have out. Take a look at DISC and what type of leader is used for those components. So there's so many wonderful tools today that are out there that you can go into solitude and self-learning mode and actually walk out being a renewed or a nude person, not only in your personal life, but definitely in the workplace, because things have changed so drastically with this COVID-19 pandemic. It's one of those things where you have to look at the situation, evaluate where you were, but where you are today, and what are the next steps for moving forward.
Okay. So let's, I have some other questions. Before we get there, and maybe you answered this already, can you define leadership?
Yeah, leadership has been defined as simply as an art of motivating people or a person or a group to act and to kind of like move forward with achieving whatever the goal is, whatever the situation is. Parents are leaders all the time. It's going back to this little 2-year-old and 3-year-old that can create very chaotic environments when they feel like they're not getting what they want. The softer the tone of the parent, the more engaging, it forces the kid to almost stop crying so they can hear what the parent is saying. And when you do that, you're, now that you have that attention and the screaming is toned down, now you have an opportunity to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And then you guide them in that process. People are very also interesting. Sometimes we do have to take on so many roles. Sometimes we're a big brother, big sister, a mother image, a father image, but always a leader, always, regardless of those other labels that go with it. We are always a leader to the people that are engaging with what it is, be it in our personal life or in our workplace marketplace. And one of the other things too.
Go ahead. One of the other things.
Is that all of this means that we want to do whatever is essentially needed, especially when you know your people, to inspire them and also prepare them to take the next step. Now, that's when we kind of leave the broad scope of what is leadership. We're now moving into more of an effective leader, because an effective leader knows how to make an operation efficient using the people, normally putting the people first. And when you do that and show them that you care and that they are meaningful for who we are and what we do in the workplace, regardless of the industry, they trust you and they're willing to follow you.
Okay, good. And so is it fair to say part of a leadership's job is to produce results through other people?
Absolutely. But you give them a whole lot of credit, because usually they are the doers. Go ahead.
Right. You produce results through other people. That's leadership.
I was looking at an article, and this may be something of interest to the listeners, the 7 traits of for leadership is post the COVID-19. I think it's interestingly titled, because I don't see a post-19 coming up any soon. But this is done by Diana Brownlee. She is a senior consultant with Careers. And what she did was she kind of came up with what we need to do, what are the 7 traits of a true leader. And one is candored. The other one has to do with consistent reliability. facts-based type communication. In other words, emotions is last, fact and database is first. You have to give the people what they need and bring a realization to a new world of operations. And it just makes a huge difference. She uses Como in this a lot, but I've wanted to focus on the ones that she outlined as the seven. The third one is empathy. You have to show people when they're slow and they are now trying to balance Zoom and work all day with children, where they could go to a workplace and not, and could do a definitive separation between that of the workplace environment and that of the home-based environment. Now you're having to combine these two responsibilities in one environment. And so a leader has to show empathy. If you can, as an employee, go to your leader and say, well, when I was reporting to work at 7:30 and 8 o'clock in the morning, my child was in a child care facility, or I didn't have to worry about the safety and care of my loved ones because that was taken care of. That freed me to be focused on the workplace, my roles and responsibilities once I arrived to this workplace environment, the building. That's changed. Now I got to take care of my family because we're limited in what we can do, to that of also focusing and perform at an expected level. So this telecommute and doing Zoom and everything, it has made a major difference. The fourth one is managing hybrid teams. This is where a leader, how do you have displaced employees come together collaboratively? That goes back to the old term of communications, knowing your people, knowing which type of communication works best for them. And in doing so, even though it reduces costs for buildings, depending upon if you're paying rent or occupancy, all of that plays a role, but you've got to change your infrastructure now into a virtual work infrastructure. Some people don't want to be Zoomed and seen. Other people don't like group dynamics and communicating. So you need to know your people and prepare them in accordance, especially when you're going to be having group meetings. And it may require that you have more group meetings for startups and then adjust and manage how time and task is working collaboratively together. The fifth one has flexibility and adapt. Go ahead.
I want to just make a comment what you're talking about here. So I've on a few platforms, I've heard men who were in leadership positions talk about how working from home and Zoom calls, and whether it's a client or with their team, that you hear the stories of they're on Zoom and all of a sudden their three-year-old daughter runs across and she's, you know, half naked and she's running out of the bathroom and daddy, can you, and he has to attend to her. And people like have some compassion for that, or his small child is crying and he stays on the call and he's holding his child. And you really didn't hear of men doing this. You may have heard women being functioning in that capacity, but now men are in that, and they're having an enormous amount of compassion and empathy for any parent who has to do that. So it's been interesting to watch the shift, and you're talking about empathy and being in working from home, and you don't necessarily want to do that, except here we are, right? So it's been very interesting.
You know what?
So we have a question. I don't know if you want to take it. I don't know.
Do we want to take our caller?
Yeah, let me take a 30-second comment to that. You are so on target, Ted. Roles and traditional roles and responsibilities have changed for men and women. It is called teamwork. We got to do this together. What task is at hand? I got it covered. And that's why you see commercials representing exactly what you just said, because it helps the audience to change their mindset. So thank you.
You're welcome. So we have a caller?
Yes, area code 870. If you want to feel free to speak, have questions, tell us your name, where you're from.
Oh, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How you doing?
Hello.
Okay, what's your name and where you calling us from?
Good old Kendrick from Prague, Arkansas. How y'all doing this evening?
Good.
Very
well. How are you?
Thanks for calling,
Kendrick.
Oh,
thank you for listening and calling in.
Oh, no problem. I've just been listening. So, majority of what you just said, a lot of these leaders are really made, to be honest with you. But I believe some are born too.
Interesting. Tell us why you say leaders are made.
Well, some can be made by precept and example, depending on you know the upbringing and access to somebody who's in a leadership position. That's my understanding to you.
Now, that's interesting. So, Linda, he's bringing up a point that I wanted to raise at some time. So, I think about people like Hannibal, Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, and all three of those men who had fathers who were major leaders. They were generals, they were kings, and they led military, they led, you know, a nation of people. And those three men grew up, you could say they were born into. So when we talk about born leaders, maybe I wonder if it is they are born into leadership, like Kendrick is saying, and they're developed almost from the day they are born. And so I named three people who are considered titans of leadership. I've met other men in, you know, in the 21st century who had fathers who were CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, and they talk about how their father's friends were other CEOs of Fortune 500, and they had access to those people, and they had conversations from a little boy. So Kendrick is saying no one is born as a leader. They're made from their environment. What do you think of that, Linda?
I'm in agreement with, like I was saying, I don't think either one isolatedly can flourish at a certain level. Born into and born with is two different entities as well. When I say born with it, that's part of your DNA, your blood type. Born into is what you just gave in your three wonderful leaders, and the offsprings of those leaders, those children, they're in that environment all the time. But I also have to say that, you know, a lily is a beautiful flower, but it's in a swamp area that you kind of go like, how did something so beautiful survive in such an ugly overtone visual environment? And I've seen people who has every reason to fail, but they flourished. And that's where I think part of that DNA blood in them is a motivator for the thirst to want to learn and to gain and be, and can probably be extremely competitive to the ones that are born with CEOs. They went to the office. As an instructor, especially when I used to teach school, I would tell the juniors and seniors, I don't know what you plan to do with your life, but if you want to be an engineer, I would browse and see which engineering companies are flourishing, then contact and ask them, I would like to volunteer to learn more about what you do, what you expect in an employee, so I'll make sure I have the right skill that you may want to hire me when I get the credentials to support what I'm capable of delivering. And that's why I was, and by the way, is his name Kendrick from Arkansas? Are you still on?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Okay. And I appreciate you bringing that to the table because it's going to be an ongoing conversation, and I would like to share that COVID-19 is forcing us as a business operation and a capitalistic society to take another look at what are true characters and what is really involved in being a true leader, because it's changed. The world has changed, the demand has changed, and what it takes to be successful is changing rapidly with it.
Did I answer your question
or your comment?
Oh, pretty much. You hit the head on the nail on the head, because back there you were talking about that bloodline thing. You know, that's really why I try to advocate to dudes. You know, you got to be careful. You know what? How you go out here and procreate? I express that a lot with Ted, because if us men are supposed to be the leaders of the society, what you look like, comes to land up, you know what I'm saying? Just popping babies out all willy nilly. So I'm on the same lines, and I stand in agreement with you.
Oh, thank you. But I stand in agreement with you calling in and expressing that so much. Thank you so much.
Oh, no problem.
Thank you.
Actually, he said something very interesting. So I'm gonna make a point by going off topic. Back in the, I think, 70s, they were talking about how Russia was really endorsing Olympic athletes, men and women, to make children. So if a man and woman were both sprinters, they wanted them to marry and have children, because what they saw was the union of that man and woman would create Olympic athletes, you know, 20 years down the line. Russia was being very intentional about that. Some people called in the U.S. wondered if that was unethical, if Russia was doing that. So what Kendrick just said is, as a man, if you have, let's say, as you said, Linda, DNA, leadership in your DNA, the kind of woman you procreate with could affect your child's ability to lead. So it's almost like if a man and woman both had that kind of leadership that you're saying, Linda, that they could potentially create another leader that looks like the ones I named, Genghis Khan, Hannibal, and Alexander the Great. So, yes, that's an interesting perspective. And I don't know if there's empirical evidence to support that we have a leadership gene or it's in our DNA. But yes, I understand what he's saying.
Right. I'm in agreement. I saw somewhere where there were some studies done with the University of Illinois over a period of time and cohort group that they observed for many years and discovered that DNA could play as much of a 35% in innate qualities that led to the progression of learning more and understanding and experiencing what it takes to be a leader. A lot of people shy away from the leadership because they're like, I don't want to be responsible for nobody. I'm barely trying to make it for myself.
Right.
But when you sit down and say, tell me your day, tell me what you did from the beginning until you laid your body down to rest at the end of the day. So as much as you can, what time did you get up? What time did you get out of the house? What did you have for breakfast? What was your travel route to work? What was the first thing you did when you got to work? How was the end of the day? Did you succeed at accomplishing what you needed to do, task-driven? Or did you engage with other people? When you answer these questions and have people to rethink, I'm exhausted from thinking about. And I've had many people say, you know, I'm so glad, Dr. Brown, that you asked these questions that way, because I didn't realize what a load I had on me in the run of a day. No wonder I'm so tired and sometimes impatient when I get home. And then I go back as a summary and say, when you did this, guess what? That was the leadership role. Do you have that title? Are you making that salary for that title? No, that's my boss. Okay, guess what? That's when an effective team can switch roles. Sometimes mentors and mentees have to share. I have a young lady. She's been in my life for a period of time. When I met her, she said, I'm not going to get my doctorate. I'm through. I'm not doing well in my classes. I'm finished. And 5 years later, we're still friends. Guess what? She is at the point where she is writing the last chapter of her dissertation in leadership.
Wow.
Because there are times that I'm her leader and I'm her mentor and she's my mentee. But when it comes to social media and when it comes to doing all these things that we have to use now as a means of communication because of COVID-19 and other issues impacting us, she is my, I become the mentee and she is my mentor. So we have to be willing, like you were saying, Ted, about the men. Sometimes the man has to switch the role and become the mom role, and sometimes the woman has to switch the role and become the father role. So it's all about, let's look at the situation, let's go get it. Let's get the job done at the end of the day. Let's have a success. It may not be at the full level desired, but you're on the right road to get there.
Are you familiar with Malcolm Gladwell's book called David and Goliath?
You know, Ted, I think you brought that book up to me. But why don't you just recap it and share the essence of it? Because I bet you it's going to cover different traits like accountability, adaptability, having levels of confidence that will bring creativity and empathy, and all these other characters that we've been kind of filtering around today. So go ahead. I'm listening fully. And then my AARP will disappear, and I'll probably remember what you said.
So the reason he called the book David and Goliath is because David was disadvantaged with Goliath. Since Goliath was so much bigger, there appeared that David could never have a chance, right? So David used his disadvantage of being smaller to finding a superior weapon, a slingshot, and he won. So Malcolm Gladwell says that premise exists in a lot of different situations, and he laid out a few of them about people who become leaders because of their disadvantage. And one was people who lose a parent or one or both parents by the time they're about 20 years old. And I don't remember what the youngest age was. But his whole thing was, when you lose a parent or two, it creates an environment that sort of demands you to develop leadership skills. And those people who have lost the parent, you know, by the age of 20, you know, if you get too far beyond that, it doesn't have the same impact. And he talked about how that creates people who are very effective leaders, and they can lead through, you know, sort of chaos and make sound decisions. The other situation was he interviewed CEOs of Fortune 500, and he noticed a pattern. And the pattern was all of these CEOs were saying when they were in elementary school, they figured out rather quickly that they couldn't keep up with class. So what did they do? They made best friends with the smartest person in math, the smartest in science, the smartest in history, geology. And what they would do was ask those people to explain the work to them. They would delegate homework or classroom assignments to those people. They'd even get them together as a group and, you know, talk about the different subjects. And the reason they had to do that, or the reason they couldn't keep up, is because they were dyslexic. They couldn't keep up. They couldn't read the assignments fast enough to keep up. So they developed auditory skills. They developed delegation skills by delegating homework and assignments to them. And those were all the things that you need as a leader. And they learned to work with people who were much smarter than them. And they never had to prove they were the smartest in the room because they knew they were not. They just learned how to lead and manage people smarter than them. And those, there are, Richard Branson is a dyslexic, and he actually did that when he was younger. And there were some other things that he talked about that dyslexic people had to learn to survive, and that it supported them being effective leaders. So that's a disadvantage that it might appear they were born leaders, except being dyslexic or the other situation, losing a parent, created an environment that sort of pulled leadership out of them. And to the rest of the world, it looks like it was born, except they can't see that it was the dyslexia or the loss of a parent.
Well, yeah, I do remember us talking about it. And, of course, we all know that it's a biblical story as well. And I think what that whole essence, too, even in the Bible and definitely by the author, was to basically showcase, don't limit yourself. Find your positive things. Find the things that you automatically know you can do well, which kind of plays a role in that. And what are your advantage? Don't let size be that, because, you know, Goliath was like, you little runt. Guess what? I'm going to stomp you, and it's over with in a matter of seconds. David said, I got a strategic plan. I got to position my body. I'm going to use something that's familiar, but many would not think that it's deadly. But guess what? I have the art to utilize the tool I've chosen to defeat you. And he was very successful. And with going to the author, where you were saying that Malcolm was reiterating that this person says, these are some deficiencies I have. Now, how do I fill these voids? Oh, I know
this person, they're smart in all these subject matters. What's interesting, no one had realized it was dyslexia that opened the door for them for leadership until Gladwell did. He actually sat down with quite a few CEOs and interviewed them. And he said he saw the pattern emerge, but before that, no one had realized it. So the CEOs didn't realize.
I'm in agreement with
dyslexia. But well, just one other thing. Gladwell said, don't believe that dyslexia is going to automatically make you a CEO. He said, because the prisons are filled with dyslexics.
Right. Well, using that as the main header for the example, that's why when they call special ed has changed so much, and so much funding is going in for the different levels and reasons why a person may be known for their imperatives. But how do you take that now that you've identified it with it and made it very positive? I had a session with a senior high schooler who has a hearing deficiency and had a sign language person working with them. And I never knew that that was a deficiency for him until this lady walked in. I'm ready to carry a one-on-one regular conversation. And she walked in and said, hi, Dr. Brown. I do sign language for him. I said, he has a hearing impairment? She said, yes. I said, honey, he did not carry himself like that. He walked in here with confidence, and I never would have known. And so even though his eye contact had to be on her, I positioned myself to be very linked to her so he could kind of see both of us at the same time. So he can't hear me. He's reading her hand motions, but he's feeling the vibes from me. And it was a wonderful experience, Ted. I know you're talking about something else, but still getting into different impairments that sometimes we're born with, how do we overcome it? And it's through education, it's through paying attention, and that's why there has been so many changes to meet all the needs for people with different impairments. So thanks for bringing that on the table. But I also wanted to add that when people take that step to fill their voice, that's where they go from survival to that of thriving, because they know the magical steps in order to escalate and to bring about a wholeness to fill the voice and move forward.
Okay. All right. I said that really getting back to what Kendrick was saying, right? So that's what
right.
The two I just laid out, those would be examples where observers might say those people are born leaders, except they have no idea that they're leaders because they're dyslexic. And that is how they survived in school, by making friends and delegating to people smarter than them. So they develop leadership skills to do that. And the other person is, you know, you lose a parent. I mean, I lost both parents in one day, so I definitely understand how that develops
right.
leadership. So.
Right. Excellent.
So what, Scott, Kendrick, do you have another question for her?
I would comment to the lady who was just speaking. Now, last I was told, now, she did mention the special ed courses. Now, back in the day when I was in special ed, this thing was a whole lot different now. But today, it done changed a whole heck of a lot since I've been in school.
Okay.
I can speak from experience. Now she telling the truth about that.
Interesting.
Now, I was slowing a little on my math and my reading, but you couldn't beat me out of pocket change, Ted.
Okay, so you had other skills. Interesting.
And that's what they're discovering now. They're doing testing to find those wonderful qualities that is there. Don't get blinded at what may be obvious. Let's dig deep, because we want to elevate and nurture those great things and make them and make that secondary. Because I was talking and he signed language to her. He said, you tell Dr. Brown that she understands the power of attraction. And I said, you know what? That's a subject matter I hadn't talked about in a long time. And I'm so glad you brought that to the table. And he said, but yours is positive. Mine is that I'm sick and tired of negative. What am I doing to attract negative? And we had a great conversation about what he could do, especially being a young senior, to make a change not only in his life, but as he brings about positivity to others, he's cleansing himself at the same time of negative things, because he's going to be forced to create ways to bring the communication of positivity to those who are also hearing impaired, because there's not a lot out there on the social media that is focusing on that. So take your talent,
okay,
make it positive, and that will encourage others to follow you. I said, you could be a great leader in that, except for one thing. He looked at me and I said, you hand sign so rapidly, you're going to have to slow it down. And he felt, she signed it to him, and he fell out laughing. He said, true, very true. I do have to slow down.
Perfect. So we're about to run out of time. Do you have any final
words? Oh, my goodness.
Of wisdom?
Okay.
Yeah, please tell people how to get in touch with you again. Any final words?
Yeah, my website is lindabrownphd.com. So it's Linda Brown, P as in Paul, H as in Henry, D as in David.com. And my email address is my name again, Linda Brown, PhD, @gmail.com. I'd love to hear from those who are listening and maybe did not get an opportunity to talk. All you have to do is reference the show. I'll be glad to give you some time to share or to ask questions. If I can provide some guidance, I'll be more than happy to do that as well, to get you jump-started in the direction that you desire to go.
Awesome, Linda. Oh, my God. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Oh, it has been a wonderful learning experience. Thank you.
And I told you 1 hour would fly by, so here we are.
It truly has.
So, Linda, thank you for joining us.
But in closing,
Go ahead. Okay. In closing?
No, in closing, of the leadership styles, you guys, and they fluctuate 10, 15, even 25 or more, but I think if you can find your DNA and nurture that with your skill set and find yourself as a servant leader to love and to give, you will always receive the ultimate gifts in return. Money will not become an issue because the servitude will bring about your finances.
Great words. Thank you for those final words. Appreciate the knowledge you've shared with everyone. And thank you for the callers. Thank you for everyone who's listening. And, great show. Look forward to speaking to you all next week with another great guest.
Yep, great show. And please don't forget to follow Team Blue Angels and participate and donate to a really good cause. Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next week.
You got it. Take care. Have a good
night.
Evening, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Good night. Bye. Thank you all again. Thank you.
Thank you.